This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning and welcome to The Morning Run. I'm Roshan Kanisen with Noel Lim in the studio this morning. In about half an hour, we've got the breakfast grill. Noel, what is happening today?
Quite exciting. Following the announcement of the guidelines yesterday, where more retailers are allowed to reopen, we speak to Datuk Wira Amir Ali Maidin, Vice President of the Malaysia Retail Association. We also speak to Datuk Michael Kang, President of SME Association of Malaysia, on their thoughts about the guidelines. And one thing also about, that close to a third of small retail businesses have collapsed in the first 3 weeks since the start of MCO 2.0. So what are some of the issues and, the expectations are more going to be folding even if if more retailers are allowed to reopen as of today.
And with that in mind, we're asking you on Twitter right now, what do you think about the move to allow most retailers to reopen ahead of Chinese New Year? We've got about 80 votes in, 20% say good, ready to shop, 46% say bad, case numbers are high, 12% prefer e-commerce, and 23% think it's too little too late, like those one-third of small retailers who have collapsed during this time. Right now, we're taking a look at SPACs, because last year there was a record number of special purpose acquisition companies, more commonly known as SPACs, with a record number of IPOs on that front. A SPAC is a kind of shell company which raises money in order to buy or invest in businesses. They're often called the blank check companies because their purpose is to find a private company to acquire and take public within a certain time frame, often 2 years, at which point the investors are in a perfect world. At which point the investors in a perfect world are supposed to be able to cash out of their initial investment.
And to put this in context, we are really talking about the SPACs in the US. Just to clarify, there are SPACs in Malaysia as well, but I think that's been more quiet. So we are seeing that more SPACs have become increasingly common in the past couple of years. According to research and data company SPAC Analytics, the number of SPACs in 2020 grew fourfold from 2019. In fact, so far in 2021, there has already been more SPACs than the entire of 2019.
That is a lot of dry powder ready to be used somewhere. And I guess the big question here is, what's driving this trend? And how sustainable is it exactly? And of course, the million-dollar question or the multi-billion-dollar question, do they all make a lot of money? For some insights on all of this, joining us this morning is Varun Mittal, Global Emerging Markets FinTech Leader at EY. Good morning, Varun. Thank you so much for your time. Now, 2020 saw a record number of SPAC listings, a trend that continues into 2021. There have already been more SPACs in the first 6 weeks of 2021 than there were in the all of 2019. Varun, what's driving this trend?
The three key reasons. In the last 10 years, since the great financial crisis, the company stayed private for much longer because there was a lot of private equity money, family office money. So if you see companies going listing at 20, 30, 40 billion. So the time they stayed private was long. What happened post-COVID, as the vaccine started to come, as the cases started to decline, one, there is massive optimism in the market. And second, there is massive liquidity in the market. There has been more US dollars printed in last 18 months than in previous decade from that perspective. So that liquidity is chasing opportunities. So when liquidity is chasing opportunities, companies which are private see this as a perfect time to go public and get them the liquidity event, get them access to public markets, because right now there is a lot of good money chasing fewer good opportunities.
And so SPACs also have attracted some controversy. What are the potential risks that investors should consider before investing in a SPAC?
For a traditional IPO, it goes through a much longer diligence process. A full investment bankers, full auditors, accountants. There's a longer journey, and it's expensive as well from that perspective. But that brings a lot of rigor. That brings a lot of checks and balances in place. A lot of the SPACs, and just for the readers, for the listeners' understanding, there is a small shell company which has no business. So you can do all the accounting and auditing on that company, but there is nothing inside it. It acquires a running business. That running business has not gone through as deep level of analysis as a company which is trying to go directly IPO. So what that does is, for the first year or the first results, there is slightly lesser level of information and transparency as you would have on a traditional IPO. And technically, it's like a trade-off between speed and depth. So it's a instant coffee versus cold brew, cold press juice versus a juice which you pick, preservative filled juice which you pick from the refrigerator and can drink. The pros and cons of both, for different scenarios, both work.
And if a SPAC doesn't manage to find a target, Varun, do investors necessarily get all their investment back, considering there are also management fees and time costs running?
See, of course, there would be some cost. So for some people who have spent, let's say, 8 to 10 months to try to find a target, put together the whole thing, there will be some cost. And when people are, so I'll give you an example. So some of the Asian SPACs got listed in US at $10, $12 share. Technically, they don't have an underlying asset. They have some capital on the book, which they want to use to buy something down the stream. So investors who are buying it, it's a willing buyer, willing seller model. They're buying knowing that we may have a scenario that this SPAC doesn't end up buying anything and it will be unwinded and there will be some money which would already been spent. So you cannot get that money back because somebody has to pay for the bills of all those people who spent, let's say, 8-10 months doing that.
And, you know, SPACs have to identify investments within a certain amount of time. But are there enough deals to go around or is there a lot of more competition that's chasing for deals, especially in this ultra low rate regime?
See, the premise is there's always enough deals. The question is what risk you want to price it for taking that deal. So, for example, electronic vehicles has been one of the key areas where a lot of companies feel that there is a market large enough for 5-10 global electronic vehicle makers. So there is a push towards that. Cloud, SaaS-based offerings, social media platforms are another target. One of them got listed recently in Asian markets with very high value. So there are specific macro themes which people see value and they're chasing. Of course, at some points, you may have some level of exuberance in some quarters, but that's how a free market capitalist economy would evolve.
And Varun, we've primarily talked about the US here. At least when we talk about SPACs, we're seeing that rise in the US. But is this a trend you're seeing in APAC as well? And if not, why?
One reason why APAC doesn't have as many of SPACs is liquidity. Because some of the markets in Asia are that you cannot buy from overseas. So overseas investors cannot participate. Only local investors can participate. If I were to buy something on Malaysian Stock Index, I will need to have a ringgit denominated account. Foreign investors can participate, but it's not as free as, let's say, a US exchange. So that's one is opening up of that liquidity pools and markets. Second is the size of the deal. The amount of effort which is required to do a $300 million deal versus a $700 million deal versus a $900 million deal is not dramatically different. And capital is porous. It moves across borders. So which is why for the people who would like to do those deals or the companies who would like to go public, for them, it's better to go for the larger deals, for the investment bankers also, for the larger deals, if the same effort and you are going to make a percentage of the thing, then you might as well go for the larger deal. So to make the economics exciting for super small deals or $200-300 million company valuation size of deals, it is tough. And that is why it gravitates towards, and we do not have too many 700 million to 1.5 billion companies in Southeast Asia. I mean, the US will have 10, 20 times that many companies.
Singapore Exchange is aiming to become a hub for tech-based SPACs. So I think they're going to allow for those SPACs to be listed. How could the design of SPACs be improved to reduce risk for investors while spurring liquidity and making it friendly for SPACs to want to list on SGX?
So SGX is bringing out a consultation paper to actually ask industry a lot of these questions. And for example, they could look at some of the things in terms of disclosures, in terms of past operating history, in terms of mandating that the firm should have last 3-year audited statements available for the investors to look. So they can add, so the premise is this, right? The extreme end is the traditional IPO. The other extreme is SPAC. So they can have something in the middle. And every time you move towards that level of transparency and disclosure, that increase the time and cost. So which is why there's a fine balance. It's not that they cannot add all of those requirements. Every time they add requirements, the funnel becomes smaller and they have to take a call on what's the balance they want to hold.
Now, Varun, in Malaysia, SPACs peaked before 2013, and history has shown that after a while, the novelty dies out. Do you think we could see that the SPACs build up again in Malaysia, and is that bubble, I guess, destined to burst?
See, I would say I would see more of this as a wave than a bubble. There are waves which come in, and a wave comes, it settles, and then the next wave comes in. We have seen there was a dot-com, then there's financial crisis. So it comes, and what would happen is we would see this time is slightly, I would say, evolved, that newer infrastructures are being built. Individual investors are getting opportunity to invest in early stage companies, even in private companies. Earlier, if you would look at 10 years ago, a common man would not have a crowdfunding platform in Malaysia to invest in early stage companies. So that democratization and opening up of access to the largest parts of the society has, I would say, broadened the base, which will cushion any kind of shock. But if there is, I would say, a minor short-term reset, then it's more of a wave going down for the next wave to go up.
Varun, thanks for your time this morning. That was Varun Mittal, Global Emerging Markets FinTech Leader at EY. Breaking down for us the, I guess, what's driving the general SPAC market, right? And really comes down to one, I think the initial reason was because companies were staying private for much longer than they used to. With all the private equity you were seeing, is particularly in Silicon Valley, you had companies like Uber who stayed private until they went to market at $100 billion or was it $80 billion valuation, which is something a bit more new in the last 10 years. And when we take a look at that, beyond that, you're also seeing a lot of optimism and a lot of liquidity.
Yeah, so closer to home, Singapore, they want to be the first major stock exchange in Asia to list SPACs that are tech-based. And I guess Singapore is in their interest to add more products or add more vibrancy to their market. But I think what's interesting, apparently, so US funds do see Southeast Asia as the next hunting ground for SPACs. And that's because the US market is saturated. The SPACs craze has seen them pitting against each other and scrambling for acquisition targets. So some of them are actually diverting their interest to Asia, and so Singapore is set to benefit from this.
I think famed Silicon Valley investor Peter Thiel was also looking in the region for particular investments. I think he formed a SPAC, if I'm not mistaken, or at least
with Richard Lee.
Yes,
Bridgetown,
that's the one.
Two Holdings.
So interesting to see what they get involved with. But right now we're going into a few messages. When we come back, we'll be talking about online learning with Nina Adlan Disney of education services provider Leap Ed. Stay tuned to BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.